This is Cinema Degeneration.
Didn't open the box. And what was it last time? Didn't know what the box was.
Oh, yes. There will be blood.
Die! On the back of the car! The critters of Hollywood! Let's get out of here!
A friend with weed is a friend indeed.
But the prime time, bitch!
Hasta la vista, baby.
Dog Wheel Hunt!
My name's Pliskin.
Go to the third channel. It's still running. Stop it, please. For God's sake, please stop it. There's no more time. You've got to... Please, stop it. Stop it now. Turn it off. Stop it!
On our show tonight, sequel to Deja Vu, our hosts celebrate the time-honored tradition of movie sequels, including the good, the bad, and the very ugly. From diabolical killers who won't stay in the grave, to science fiction epics whose stories cannot be contained, to a single chapter, and so much more. Join us for the tales you love, and some that you won't believe got made in the first place.
Party time! Ow!
It's the rocking, shocking, new wave of horror. Howling 2. Howling 2. It's not over yet.
All right, folks, welcome once again to Cinema Degeneration and sequel to Deja Vu. I'm not really sure if we got a good one for you this evening, but we definitely got you a bit of a stinker. It's a so bad it's a good kind of movie, at least in my humble opinion. We are doing Howling 2. Your sister is a werewolf from 1985, and the poster says the rocking, shocking new wave of horror. Yeah, it's rocking and shocking if you like listening to the same song played more than 10 times in the same movie. And joining me this evening is my good buddy Eric Phillips. How we doing, Eric?
Gasping for air at the moment.
We'll take a moment and get your breath. We'll carry on here. I'm going to go ahead and give the folks.
There we go.
I'm going to give the folks a quick IMDb synopsis because I know we both have quite a bit to say about this movie.
Indeed.
All right. Howling 2, Your Sister is a Werewolf from 1985 is as follows. A man discovers that his sister was a werewolf and helps an investigator track down a gang of the monsters through the United States and Eastern Europe. Yep, and that's about as loosey-goosey as we go with the plot on this one, which, even though it continues with it's a continuation of the first movie, and I'm using air quotes there because it's very loosey-goosey. It's very little relation to the OG. I mean, even though it kind of brings back the central character, they do it in a very lazy way, wouldn't you agree?
I don't know so much if it was lazy as much as it was the original director of the Howling, Joe Dante, going, don't use my fucking work for this piece of shit that you're making.
Right. he was doing Gremlins at this point, so he had definitely moved onwards and upwards.
Yeah, I mean, The Howling, I had to actually go back and watch the original Howling because I hadn't seen these movies in so long. And I really enjoyed the first movie, watching it again. And, you know, I really remember why I fell in love with it. And so as I keyed up The Howling 2, you know, I'm like, I'm kind of getting into this. All right, let's see where we go. And at the end of the experience, there's...
Yeah, they're just two polar opposites of movies. One is a little bit classy, and the other one is just complete extra cheese sauce.
Oh, it's completely and utterly 80s trash. made in 1985, which was the height of 80s trash.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, the first one, I mean, had, you know, what, Kevin McCarthy and John Carradine in it, not to mention star D. Wallace Stone, I mean, who was everybody's, you know, favorite movie mom at that point between, like, you know.
Well, that's no excuse for this Cujo's movie. They had, they had Christopher Lee. That's Dracula. Saruman.
Yeah. Come on. And, like, and hunted Nazis for a living, you know, at one point in his life. You know, I mean, like, the man was, how do you want to say?
Legitimate badass.
Yeah. And Christopher Lee, you know, I mean, God bless him, but he's trying to class up the joint. But
he really did. He really tried. You could tell.
Oh, and he was not, I'm not saying he wasn't well cast, but cast opposite of Annie McEnroe and Red Brown, you know, they have given much, much better performances. They were just not good in this movie.
Yeah, not only that, but The Howling 1. Here's the thing. You at the end of that movie, you get your ending. Not going to spoil it for anybody who hasn't seen it. But then when they go back into the second movie, the part that makes sense the most is if you're going to give somebody a visual reminder of what happened in the first movie, your general go-to would be to use that first movie.
Yeah, well, use that footage.
Yeah, and instead, we got a reshot of the second movie, and just watching the first movie to the second movie, oh my God. Now, they're 4 years apart. No, they're not even 4 years apart. They're 3 years apart. It was 84. The other one was 81. Mm-hmm. So they're 3 years apart. And The Howling was a passion project. The Howling 2 was a cash grab.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And
the makeup is horrid. The effects are horrid. The storyline is awful. it's a real hot mess.
Well, you know, I think a lot of it has to do, too, with the level of direction. You got somebody like Joe Dante doing the first one, you know, classy fucking guy and director. And Philippe Mora, don't know anything about him other than he has one hell of a weird body of work. You know, I was looking up some of his, you know, movies and stuff. And I'm like, wow, like he did Richard the Third. And Howling 3, Pterodactyl Women from Beverly Hills, like, and then like even the Dennis Hopper joint, Mad Dog Morgan, I'm not saying he's a schlock director, which wouldn't be a negative really to me in the first place because I love schlock, but it's just, yeah, right. it's just the kind of direction you got, and I think the odds were stacked against him. I had read.
I think not only were the odds stacked against him, but I think what we're getting here too, because like one of the things I noticed, Howling is filmed in the USA. Howling 2 is filmed in USA and Czechoslovakia. And I think they went with I think he might be one of the foreign directors.
Like the tax incentive directors.
I don't know if that's what it is necessarily, because, like, I will give it this movie. A lot of the scenes reminded me of Fulci's work.
Yeah, a little bit. It seems like Fulci unhinged.
Yeah, right. A little bit. Like, not like the effects. Like, a lot of, like, Seven Doors of Death and House by the Cemetery vibes.
Yeah, they like go in for a lot of close
makeup
ups,
work
a lot of
and
that.
The blood works and stuff like right. that.
But it felt like somebody trying to imitate Fulci.
Yes, it really did. It really did.
But my biggest problem is, and I'm sure I'm going to say this more than once, but did everyone just forget what happened at the end of part one? Because they said nobody saw. I think was it the Jenny character literally said nobody saw what happened. It was beamed live on television. Like
but then they swapped the story and said that the tape never aired. And it's like,
what about the little
that was live?
Yeah, that was live. Yeah, the tape never aired, but it doesn't matter if the tape vanished. Everybody that was watching the news live that night, especially the little kid that was like, "Mommy, the news lady's turning into a werewolf."
And we're already ahead of ourselves because there's so many continuity errors between the first movie and the second movie was they wanted a sequel that it doesn't land. It was, you know, I have a very good analogy for this. I call it the potluck dinner spaghetti. It's called the spaghetti potluck dinner because what they basically did was they cooked an entire pot of spaghetti and meatballs. And then to see if the noodles were done, they threw that whole fucking thing against the wall and saw what stuck.
Well, okay, we don't have to talk about this movie in a linear fashion because the movie itself isn't very linear. So we can jump around a little bit, and I'm going to do that. But did it seem to me like they thought they were almost making a vampire movie and not a werewolf movie?
Yes, thank you.
Like, they're using garlic... Garlic to ward off werewolves. Don't remember
That's actually, I looked that all this shit up because that it's been a while since, you know, my Eastern European horror history. But here we go. Actually, garlic is believed to ward off evil spirits in Eastern Europe. Nikki did the research on that one.
Okay, I will amend my comment then. I will do that.
However, titanium is complete and utter made up bullshit. That is nothing because lycanthropy came from Greek.
Well, and also a stake through the heart at one point.
Yeah, a stake through that wall only if they're an immune immune werewolf.
Yeah, and werewolves that are immune to silver, like they just threw that shit in.
Yeah,
they're like, listen.
Well, not only that, but here's the thing: he wouldn't care. And dies though they killed her with silver bullets, but because they took the silver bullets out of her, she's alive again. Like, what? No.
and the fact that they use an actress who to me looked like Sting with a wig on. It didn't look like D. Wallace Stone.
No. Well, there's that and.
I mean, obviously they weren't going to get her back. I mean, you know, so they at least could have got somebody that like looked remotely like the character.
You could have tried. You could have tried.
Nobody tried in this movie except Christopher Lee.
Let's bring that up for a minute, Mr. Christopher Lee, because that's literally the first character we are introduced to in this movie. You got your opening shot, which
is that cold open.
The cold open is the most. What the fuck is going? What in the Kentucky Fried Fuck did I just watch? Moment.
Is he supposed to be in the cosmos? Is he like Neil deGrasse Tyson talking about aliens and shit?
He did have a Carl Sagan feel to it, didn't it?
Yeah. And he's, you know, I mean, I'll listen to that man read the phone book, but I don't know what the fuck that was supposed to be about.
Like, it's like a fucking studio executive was sitting around somewhere and say, you know what? How do we give this movie a mystical vibe? I got it. Put Christopher Lee in the fucking star background.
Yep.
You know, kind of like that one in Star Wars. That's very popular. The kids like the Star Wars. Okay, now we got to have spooky. So what are we going to do? have a skeleton fade in behind Christopher. But that's not spooky enough. Now we got to get a biblical audience. How are we going to get them in? I know, I've got it. Revelations. She's the mother of whores.
Now, I can't say anything. I had a character reading the that almost those exact same lines from...
Yeah, Cameron, I'll give you that, but here's my point of that one here right now. I knew you were going to bring this up because I know how your mind works. But, yep. Yeah, I've done that. I can't make fun of that too much.
No, I wasn't going to say you can't make fun of it. But
I can't redeem you, sir, because like I said, this movie has channeled my inner Jim Cornette. Because I'm going to tear this thing apart. I'm going to cut a promo on this thing so bad. And let's start with the director here. Mr. Director, if you are going to have Sir Christopher Lee read a fucking Bible verse out of that book, you might want to know where that Bible verse comes from. There's a quote from Revelations. You know where Revelations is in the Bible?
At the end?
Yeah. It's in the back. That motherfucking book's in the middle.
Oh, hell, it's in the first third, at least.
Chris, you're in Deuteronomy. You need to go further back.
Yeah, you know, and it really made no sense to have him read that. It didn't really pertain to anything in the movie. It was just like, listen, you know, we got Christopher Lee for like 2 more hours. Can we throw up a green screen and have him like do some spooky shit and read from a spooky book?
Well, they're trying to say that Stibia or whatever, Labia Activia, whatever the fuck her name is.
Oh, Sturba?
Fruit on the bottom. Whatever the fuck her name
is. On the bottom, Sturba, not stirred.
Yeah, right. Sturba, whatever the fuck her name is. They're trying to make her
as the mother
of all abominations. And they're saying that werewolves and vampires are abominations. And that's where all this weird shit that has nothing to do with werewolves comes into the movie, I guess.
But like, I like the idea of the character, this 10,000-year-old werewolf, but she got a stupid fucking name.
Yeah.
Sturba. Sounds like something my grandma would have said, you know, like Sturba the sauce, you know, like
Sturba the car over to the other side of the road.
Dumb fucking name, man. It
really is.
Now I want to jump ahead a little bit. I got to jump ahead because I'm looking at a still here, and Sturba at many many points in the movie is always doing it, you know, chanting in incantations, right? Because there's a whole bunch of different ceremonies. What the fuck is the deal with the spirit Halloween fucking bat creature that like comes to life at the end and has no other purpose than to swim down a dude's throat?
Oh, the little fucking gargoyle thingy.
Yeah, it looks like a spirit Halloween bat, man.
Well, that's where that faulty vibe came in. Oh, here's something fucked up that just happened. What was the point of that guy showing up?
Okay, I gotta ask, because I know what mine is. What do you think is the most ridiculous scene, or at least the single most ridiculous shot or scene of this movie? Because I know what mine is. Mine is not the introduction of Christopher Lee, but the second time we see Christopher Lee at the punk club and then putting those ridiculous wraparound shades on him. He looks so uncomfortable, like, oh, God, no, like, please. Oh, God, wait. Okay.
I'd have loved to see I'd have loved to have been on set after they called cut.
I can imagine it was something like, can you believe they put these shades on this face? Wait, show me a close-up of my check again.
Christopher Lee has never seen this movie. However, he has seen the house the check bought.
yeah, and the house was quite lovely, so he's just like, yep. I believe that's a Michael Caine quote, isn't it?
It is. It's from Jaws 4.
Yep, I thought so. However,
I can, since we're jumping around here in my notes, I will give you an actual Christopher Lee quote. Christopher Lee apologized for being in this movie from director Joe Dante when he was casting Gremlins 2, The New Batch.
Well, he's a gentleman then, because I mean, like, I can imagine.
imagine that for a second. Imagine being Joe Dante, fucking, and you have Christopher Lee come up to you and apologize for being in a movie you had nothing to do with because your movie was so good.
That's why I say Christopher Lee's a classy guy, because he is just like, this is the proper thing to do. I need to apologize, and I should apologize. And, you know, I read that too. I thought to myself, I would have loved to have been there for that. Like, sorry for that piece of shit that I made.
But okay, getting back to your question, there's two great shots in this movie that I can bring up. To answer your question, the first one is, did you notice that during the transformation scenes, they're really fixated on nipples for some reason?
Oh, yeah. Hairy werewolf nipples.
Like, we get hairy werewolf nipple shots like 5-6 times in this movie, and it's just like, why?
Oh, yeah, probably 8-9 different times, I'm sure. They show hairy werewolf nipples about as often as they play that fucking song.
Yeah, pretty much.
But that song, we got to talk about that for a bit. Steve Parsons and Babel playing the Howling Club mix. That's it. They didn't call it anything else. Did not give it a title, just Howling.
Did you read the whole album like I did? Just read all the song titles?
No, like, I did not.
There's like, okay, well, there's like, I don't know, four different songs that repeat on there. And it's like club mix, regular mix, this and that. That's all that one song. But then there's the other songs, and it's all like about werewolves.
Oh, geez. Yeah. I really, truly feel like they were trying to make a serious film here. Like, I don't doubt that they thought they were making serious, you know, a serious horror movie, a serious drama.
Yeah, I really think they do. Like, yeah, but one of the things that you brought up that really confused me was like, that somebody either didn't know their fucking lore, or a studio executive meddled in this.
Well, if you listen to the director, he says one of the things was, I read in an interview, was that they had sent him the wrong werewolf outfits, that it was labeled Planet of the Apes. It was leftover ape suits.
Are you fucking kidding me? Oh, God, dude.
That explains a lot, doesn't it?
Dude, I literally have a joke in here. Where is it in my notes? Oh, here it is. Makeup somewhere between the Planet of the Apes and the Geico Caveman.
Yeah. And that he was, apparently he had argued with the executives, like, listen, you sent me the wrong, you know, outfits. I can't do anything with these. And they basically told him, you're a talented director. You're figured out. And they hung
up. Make it work.
And yeah, it was Christopher Lee's idea to put in a line in the movie about, nature working in reverse or something like that, or evolution working in reverse. And he says, you'll see some odd things.
Okay. That makes, see, and you know what? That's what makes Christopher Lee such a brilliant fucking actor. The guy sees a fucking shit movie that he's in. He's already committed to it. And rather than going, you know what? You can keep your money. I'm not being any more part of this. The guy tries to class the joint up and does what he can. And even fucking adds input to it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have a whole lot of trivia and a whole lot of behind-the-scenes stuff, but I did have those two little tidbits. So that does, well, anyway, what I was getting at was not just that Christopher Lee's a classy guy and he's the best thing about this movie, but it's that the director had blamed that, you know, that the mismatch of, you know, levels of werewolves and vampires and the weird kind of apey-looking suits that they had, was he blamed it on the production team. You know, the producers. Okay, but the writers didn't have anything to do with that. Everybody else didn't have anything to do with that. The editing certainly didn't have a play in any of that. The editing, some of the wipe cuts in this are almost Looney Tune-ish.
It almost has that feel like they wrote this vampire movie And then somewhere along the line, they said, "Ah, yeah, it's a great movie making about vampires." They had this vampire movie. They're like, "Make it about werewolves." And somebody just crossed out vampires and put werewolves.
Somebody at one point said, "Hey, you know what we got here? We got a great vampire movie, and we also happen to have the rights to make a Howling sequel. Make it happen." You know?
Yeah, what, huh?
Like, yeah, hey, don't worry, you're a talented guy. I feel you can figure it out, click, you know?
Make us money!
I made several notes about the music in here. Now, we've joked around about the song. That song that Bell and Steve Parsons play plays many different times. It opens with it, pretty much plays the whole song. It makes another appearance 8 minutes in, second appearance. Third appearance is 20 minutes in. Fourth appearance is 27 minutes in. Fifth appearance is 33 minutes in. Now, I'm going through all of them, so buckle up. Now, this is the biggest gap. Appearance number six is 56 minutes in, so we go almost a whole 20 minutes without hearing this fucking song. That's the longest period you pretty much go. Appearance number seven, 59 minutes in. Appearance number eight, hour and 8 minutes. Appearance number nine, hour and 23. And appearance number 10, hour 26. And it plays over the whole time. There might have been an 11th one that I missed, but if anybody knows that there is a one that I missed, please correct me on it, because I do want to be right. But that many goddamn times
song plays roughly every 15 minutes.
Yeah. Oh, more often than that, for the most part. I mean, it's almost every 7 or 8 minutes.
Jesus.
Yeah, and sometimes they play a few seconds of it, but sometimes they play that whole fucking verse. They play a whole.
Well, I'll tell you what, though. That's how 80s bands got promoted back in the day. If you were a fucking up-and-coming, halfway talented band in the 80s, they threw you in a fucking movie, and they see what your sales number did when the fucking soundtrack came out. That's how, look at the...
Because it is, you know, I will give it this. It's a catchy song, and I do like it. But once you've heard it 10 or 11 times in an hour and 38 minutes, it kind of sucks a big turd.
And it played every fucking 7 to 8 minutes.
It's like, he's probably going to be like, "I didn't even get paid for that shit."
You're going to pay for it now, buddy.
But now, one thing I want to know, like, did I miss something in the beginning of Ben and Jenny? You know, Ben, I know, is supposed to be the original girl's sister, the Karen's sister.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be Karen's brother, sorry. And Jenny, is she supposed to be just a friend of theirs? They said they worked together. So was she a reporter as well? You know, I mean, because I know she's trying to get it.
Because she said she knew all those people on the tape, so I'm pretty sure that she was probably an affiliate of the station.
Okay, that's what I mean. Like, I knew she was a journalist because she was saying, you know, "I'm going to get a story." And then even Ben at one point says, you know, she's trying to get the Pulitzer Prize. But I'm like, did she work for the TV station? But now you mentioned it, I do remember her saying that she knew everybody that recognized everybody in the tape.
Right. But you asked if you missed something in the beginning. Yes, you did, actually. At 2 minutes and 4 seconds, we get a lovely mural of Edmund Blackadder.
Who is that?
Edmund Blackadder?
I don't know the name.
That was Mr. Bean before he is Mr. Bean.
Oh.
If you've BBC had a show called Blackadder. And there's a shot. I've
seen it.
Well, there's a shot. One of the main characters is the guy that plays Mr. Bean, is Edmund Blackadder. So there's a shot in the mural of the opening credits at 2 minutes and 4 seconds. It just looks like his character. So thought I'd throw that joke in there for any BBC fans out there.
See, a ton of people have told me that I need to watch Blackadder if I like Mr. Bean even a little bit. And I've just not.
Oh, I will tell you right now. Blackadder is 100% better than Mr. Bean. Mr. Bean's good, but Blackadder is so much better. The insults that this man comes is just fucking brilliant.
Nice, nice. I love people that are a little bit snarky. That's why we get along so well.
Yes.
God, I want to know what the next topic I want to. Oh. Well, they did a good job. I will say they did do a good job of hiding the bad makeup, because they put everything in the dark so often. They're just like, this is not good. So we're just going to, you know what I mean? We're just going to cover it up.
Oh, speaking of dark, folks, if you're wanting an original VHS copy of this fucking movie, do not get it.
No.
Go to Laserdisc or DVD.
I don't know if there's a Blu-ray. I'm pretty sure there's probably a Blu-ray of this.
I'm sure there probably is by now. They got a fucking Blu-ray of Dolls, for crying out loud. So if Dolls is there, fucking, I'm pretty sure Howling 2 is there. You can get fucking Forbidden Zone on Blu-ray. But yeah, the fucking VHS tape of fucking Howling 2 was so fucking dark, you could barely watch it.
Yeah, I actually have one of those, the HBO Thorn videotapes. I have one of those. I did not watch it. I watched mine on Laserdisc. I do have it on Laserdisc. And I should have just watched it streaming. It would have been much easier. I know it's on Tubi and Pluto.
But Laserdisc is so crispy.
Yeah, it's much better than that print that they got online. Because I did watch that for a little bit. But, oof. Bad print. Bad fucking print. And yeah. Speaking of bad, I'm like, well, we're going to make this segue several times, but speaking of bad, the whole thing of Mariana being immune to silver, only titanium works. Now, we touched base on that for a brief second, but like, what? When? How? Like, it's never expanded upon at all. It's just like, yeah, this is a new breed, and they're all of a sudden immune to silver? But
yeah, and werewolves come from Transylvania now?
Yeah! That's what I also thought. Like, I think they might have
Dark Country. Transylvania. It's funny how Transylvania looks an awful lot like the Czech Republic.
Yeah. It's like, is this Prague? I think this might be Prague. I'm not sure. But, yeah, it's just... I think you hit the nail on the head when you said that they had a vampire movie and said, you know what would be great? We turn this into a werewolf movie.
Well, I mean, that's the only thing I can think of. I mean, even Christopher Lee's playing the Van Helsing part, for crying out loud.
Yeah. And what about that last minute thing of them shoehorning in within the last, like, 12 minutes that he is supposed to be Sturba's brother?
Yeah, where the fuck? Why? And then not explain that bullshit.
I don't get it, man.
It's like,
but she wants to. She, you know,
I get it. Somebody was coked out of their fucking gourd when they wrote this movie.
I mean, I do get it. It was 1985. What else do you need to say?
I mean, good God.
I'll say one thing though, Sturba being 10,000 years old, she still looks fantastic, even when before she sucks the essence out of that young sacrifice. She's still a pretty fantastic, you know, as the old lady hag, even for 10,000 years old. So I'll give them that. And another thing I didn't know, speaking of things that are out of place, where did they find such a wooded cemetery like that in the middle of L.A.?
Right. Because it was Czechoslovakia.
Yeah, it was all Czechoslovakia. Like, this does not look like L.A. at all. Now, I will have to give credit where credit's due. There's a character that's taken out very early on within the first, like, 30 minutes of the movie named Erla. He's played by a character actor named Ferdy Main. He's actually really, really good, and actually has some really great makeup on him, because he's the one werewolf that begs to be taken out. He begs Stefan to take him out once they shoot him and wound him. But I understand.
Yeah.
That was a great part. I mean, that was one of the few parts that shined. Yeah. Why'd they throw that net on him? Like, the net did nothing. They had that little white net, right, that they threw on to, like, ooh, let me put it on you. And the Red Brown is kind of situating it around the werewolf, almost like he's tucking him in at night with a blankie, like, here we go, we're gonna tuck you in. This didn't make any sense. Well,
somebody watched a lot of Electric Company Spider-Man.
Because the next thing I was going to talk about was at one point when they actually do get the Transylvania or the Dark Country, as they keep referring to it as. Because I think they only call it Transylvania once. But, yeah. You know, they call it the Dark Country like 18 times. But Christopher Lee is literally just sleeping in the back of the car before they get the roadside ambush. Like, he's literally like, I'm just going to sleep. You two motherfuckers drive. I'm like, but you have dialogue to do. He's like, not anymore.
No.
But, I love when they got the little old lady laying there in a puddle of blood, who actually, again, you know, turns out to be an ambush, because in this country, in Transylvania or the Czech Republic, everybody's a vampire. Everybody's a werewolf. She attacks them. Everybody else just magically disappears. And Christopher Lee's great line of, they're here, but they're not here. It's just like, okay.
Well, what the fuck does that mean?
They either disappeared or they're hiding in the bushes, which is why being so cryptic.
They're here, but they're not here. Well, what the fuck do you mean they're here or they're not here? They're obviously not here. We're not seeing that. Are they hiding in the fucking bushes? How did they get in the bushes so quietly? Why didn't we hear any rustling? Nobody heard a branch break?
Yeah.
Come on, man.
These were a bunch of old fucking werewolves, for Christ's sake. They couldn't be moving that stealthily.
And well, not only that, but that's another thing. It's like they tried to fucking pull shit like that would happen in the old movies where people would be standing on the side of the road and then all of a sudden they just disappear.
Yep.
But it wasn't supposed to be werewolves.
To be snarling, or some heavy breathing, something.
You know,
right?
you either got the impression that it was town folks that were trying to warn you about the place, and then they took off in a fucking hurry because they were so terrified, or they were ghost people.
Yeah, you know? Not werewolves.
You kind of had that feeling. Not werewolves, though. Like I said, this fucking whoever wrote this movie was fucking high on coke, or just got their lore mixed up, or fucking.
I think they got a book stroke. That was mistitled werewolf lore instead of vampire lore, and they're just like, okay, we got to fix it in post. This is a classic case of fix it in post.
Yeah, I mean,
another classic thing about this movie, the backseat driver, the werewolf that just pops up in the backseat that they shoot at point.
Yeah, the
same. Range.
Yeah, the old fucking werewolf in the trunk. Well, before we get the werewolf in the trunk, one of the first shots we see is the fucking truck full of werewolves coming to the Dark Country, because they just so happen to know that, you know, they're going to the Dark Country too.
Yep.
Which isn't explained. But, you know, you get a couple of dudes just backpacking through the fucking countryside there, and they're like, oh yeah, hop in for a ride. And, you know, when you get eaten by werewolves, it really, you know, tends to make for a couple of sauerkrauts.
Oh.
Stop, Dad!
I see what you did there, sir.
Yeah.
Oh, I got a note here, though. Is it me? But werewolf sex does not appear sexy or elegant in any way. It just looks really, really painful and awkward.
Oh, are you talking about our werewolf bondage party thing?
Yeah, or Vlad, who plays Vlad? I wrote his name down because I can never remember his name. Judd Omen, good character actor, but I always forget his name. Like, he is given Mariana. I'm losing air quotes here that you can't see. Given Mariana is a gift from Sturba, but they're not really being given to him. They're just invited to have a threesome. So, werewolf threesome, very weird. And speaking of weird,
very hairy,
70s bush, 70s bush all the way. And the hairiest boobs I've ever seen in a movie ever. And what's with all the hairy werewolf nipples in this movie? Like, it's not like a Joel Schumacher Batman movie where they put nipples on the bat suit, but man, there's a lot of werewolf nipples in this movie. But the creepy hotel, that's the next thing I want to talk about. How did they not, like, pick out that this place was going to be bad news? And when the creepy hotel, like, we're going to give you room 666, and he has that awkward laugh, and it's like, and he's like, even says, you know, to the point of, like, that's hotel doesn't look like it has six floors. Oh, that's right.
Yeah, I was like,
I'm like, yeah,
you know what?
We're not going to stay.
I'm going to go find the Motel 6.
Yeah. I'm going to go sleep out on a pile of hay that's laying on top of a pile of sheep manure.
Right, I think like, I'd rather fucking sleep in a place called the Sodomy Den than this place. At that point.
I saw a place down the street called the Slaughtered Lamb. I'm just going to say this place called the Slaughtered Lamb I saw down the street.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Speaking of clunky and weird looking, the werewolf fucking is even more awkward than the human fucking at that. We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, they could have totally left that out.
But the whole thing I don't get, clunky and weird looking, Sturba's outfit. It does not say Eastern European Transylvanian werewolf. It says Barbarella.
It doesn't even say Barbarella. It says fucking East L.A.
It's just so weird. It's like something I would expect in a sci-fi film, not a film like this.
Yeah, it's like she just like fucking got off of what is it? Is it Battle Beyond the Stars? It looked like fucking space costumes. Like maybe they fucking like you know what? Maybe there's some truth into that fucking prop department fucking just sending over like. You know what? Here's a fucking trunk of old costumes. Make do with what you got.
Right, right.
We're sending over
a bunch of suits from Planet of the Apes, and we're supposed to be making a fucking werewolf movie out of it.
If you noticed that there was a lot of fucking those suits were like sci-fi-ish.
Yeah, yeah, totally, totally.
And like they were cut to make that 85 trash 80s look. That was going on during that genre because it was all about black leather and metal and fucking the more weirder and you could show cleavage and skin but not be risque at the same time, the better. And fucking it was just a weird fucking time in general. And some of the fashion was at its fucking utmost weirdest.
Yeah, 80s fashion.
Remember the fucking glasses? That were plastic and they were like bright red and bright green and bright purple. And they absolutely served no fucking purpose under the sun whatsoever because they were plastic all the way across the eyelids, but you could see through them like a pair of blinds.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know which ones you mean. I call it the fly spec shades. They look like, there was another term for it I'm trying to find here, but I always call them fly spec shades. Like you're looking through
the garbage shit you used to get in the Flintstones Fruity Pebbles cereal box.
Yeah, it looked like you're looking through. It looked like you were looking through a fly swatter.
Yeah, that shit was fashionable.
Well, they thought it was fashionable, but once they came down from all the cocaine, that's when they realized that they had to change those fashion senses.
Yeah, it fucking literally woke up in a fucking cartoon strip. Why am I fucking dressed like a Ninja Turtle villain?
My God, well, like at least one thing came out of becoming a little bit more sober in later years is that the fashion got better. Maybe it
somewhat.
Got better. I don't, yeah.
There was that whole thing in the 90s with fanny packs for a minute there, but
oh God. Yeah, never succumbed to wearing a fanny pack. Never did. I'll just carry a really big wallet.
Well, you know what? Like, just think about this for a second. Women worked so hard back in the 90s with the fucking, the Susan Sarandon fucking thigh master and the fucking buns of steel and all that fucking garbage they were peddling. And then out comes this fucking fanny pack that you wear over your gut. It's like you fucking got a manufactured fupa.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean,
and women were fucking wearing around like, I'm not getting my fanny pack.
It was almost as big of a travesty as the big shoulder pads.
The only thing funnier than the fucking fanny pack was the dude that wore two of them like he was a saddle horse.
Oh, Jesus. As Deadpool said, it is not a satchel, it's a fucking fanny pack, and you know it.
Right. It's like this is
not a goddamn utility bag.
That is a man purse. Fuck off. That is not a book satchel. That is a man purse.
Yeah, that is not books? A utility bag. You can call it
a utility bag. Are you carrying books in that, sir? That is not a fucking book bag. It is a man purse. Fuck out of here. And take your man purse with you.
Not even a man purse. It's a fanny pack. Let's just call it what it is. It's a fucking fanny pack. Off of fanny packs.
Ugh.
We digress, folks. We're going to keep this shit in. But we digress. I got to make a point here. Because we're at least Act 3 of the movie. Act 2 is kind of winding down. We're getting Act 3. Two notes I have here. One, the transformation scenes at this point are very minimalist and silly. It felt like yes. They were trying to hide them in the different shots. And they were always done at random. They would always show transformation scenes of different werewolves. I felt like they had a second unit that was just told, go off and instead of woods, film close-ups of claws and teeth and hair.
And it was always done in parts, too. They'd always show you different little parts. Yes. And they, if you noticed, if you watched closely, they use those shots more than once.
Yep. Oh, yeah. It's just like the song. They use the song 10 times. They use the same ear-growing shots and fingernail-growing shots over and over again, using the age-old technique of just reversing the film sometime or just flipping the negative and just like, hey, now if I'm playing from right to left, it's playing left to right.
Now, I will give credit where credit is due. Whoever was in charge of making the sets for this movie, kudos.
The sets
classed
up
the film. The sets looked great.
I think a lot of it were actually locations. I think they actually got some legit locations. And
yeah,
there was obviously some set building going on, definitely, though.
Yeah, that throne room for the queen, that looked like a werewolf queen's den. Kudos. Congratulations.
Yeah. If there is one really good technical achievement in this movie, it is the sets and the location. So, yeah, I will agree with you there. Another thing I got to...
Beautiful background.
There's some other things I got to touch base on, and this is just character choices. Like, okay, they're having the new full moon festival or whatever the hell it was that was supposed to be going on. And this happens to be right when they're getting there because they're celebrating the coming of the new moon. And Sturba's plan, or not Sturba, but Stefan's plan is to find Mariana, have her lead them back to Sturba. But when he sees Mariana, he ignores her and just kind of stands in the shadows, smoking his pipe and nodding at her and doesn't follow her. It doesn't make any sense. Like, Stefan sure is easily tricked and easily fooled. You know, I'm not saying it is a detriment or a negative to Christopher Lee at all. It's just the character choices that Stefan makes. He's supposed to be this age-old Van Helsing-like hunter, and he's kind of a lame duck. He's a hell of a shot.
But he's supposed to be an occult investigator. And, okay. Yeah, character choices. Let's bring up a character choice since we're talking about it. If you're in a place called the Dark Country hunting werewolves, and a creepy back alley dwarf starts calling your name that you've never met before in your life and starts leading you away from the fucking crowd down the creepy alleyway, why are you following him?
Yeah, because I know following him was so super important that he had to... that he had to follow him to get to find out how he got that necklace.
Right, that Stefan creepy Stefan. Like, I'm sorry. Somebody did that to me. I'm fucking going like, no, I'm not going down that alley. Why? Because you know what? He might be a short little guy, but he might try to go up on me or something. I don't fucking know.
A short little guy with a knife is still something to contend with, you know, I'm just saying.
Yeah, right. Acting like a little fucker can't stab somebody.
I was going to say, poor Vasil, though. I kind of felt sorry for him before he got transformed into the eyeless, like, werewolf, zombie, whatever the hell he was supposed to be. But poor Vasil, he gets it worse than anybody. Yeah. He got it the worst, though. I think he got it worse than anybody else in this movie. I don't know. It's a horror movie. I expect, you know, cruelty and mayhem and violence in it. But his death just seemed little overtly violent for being such a, I'm not going to say he was an unimportant character, but he was a side character. And just like anybody else in that town, it just seemed to me like it was like they treated the little dude exceptionally cruel.
Yeah, it was pretty fucked too.
Oh, gosh. What else we got here? Tondo. What? That's who I also want to talk about. Tondo. What the fuck was with Ben leaving Jenny alone with Tondo, the fucking creeper fucking, I'm using air quotes here again, guide, just for him to, A, turn out to be a werewolf and to be a rapey werewolf at that?
Yeah, that was fucking like, oh, here's people you've never met before. Good luck, bitch.
Yeah, like, hey, I'm going to go off and buy you a gift here at this festival. I'll be right back. Oh, where'd they go? I do like, however, though, when he is caught trying to attack Jenny, that Sturba and Vlad and I think Mariana's there, too, if I remember correctly, show up and they womp his ass and they're like, let, you know, because they don't abide by that. I thought that was a neat touch to show that the werewolves were even like, hey, you know, no assault here. You know, we ain't about that.
Right. Yeah. It had a touch class.
Yep. Yeah, like I said, it's weird. There is little weird touches of class in this otherwise classless movie.
Yeah.
Oh, let's get into this ending here with the weapon up scene. Usually I'd love a scene in a movie. It's the scenes that I love for where they gear up, you know, they're getting their guns and their knives together. This is the lamest weapon. Right,
the villagers grabbing their pitchforks. Ash building the fucking chainsaw hand.
Yeah, shit fucking
like that.
Reggie making the four barrel shotgun.
Yeah, that's the fucking amp up moment.
This is just like, hey, I'm gonna open up this leather case here, and I got a couple of knives. I got a thing of fucking explosives here. Yeah, I got a random gun.
This belongs to the seal. Oh, this knife's not supposed to be in here. That's supposed to be with the charcuterie board. Fuck.
Sorry, that's just a paring knife, man. But that was just really lame. I know they were they're trying to make it impressive. Like, hey, this is our... I'm going to just straight up say it. It's a vampire killing kit. It's not really a fucking werewolf killing kit because there's nothing in there that would pretty much kill werewolves, I don't believe.
Speaking of werewolf killing and, you know, characters getting their just new, what the fuck was up with Sybil Danning's fucking glowing beef curtain cloak?
I don't know. I have questions. Like, I have questions about that myself.
Like the fucking cloak. Like seriously, that fucking the laser show that went on out of her fingertips looks like the fucking gun that fucking Riff Graff kills Rocky Horror with.
Oh, geez. Yeah. Yes.
It's like straight cheese. Well, it looked like fucking straight RKO effects.
Oh, it was those weird late 70s, early 80s, like pre-CGI optical effects. Yeah. You know, that usually I love that kind of stuff because it, you know, come on. That's just
it looks
stuff
good.
I grew up with. But this
it
does
looks
not
good, though.
Look good.
But it doesn't look. It looks bad. It looks so cheese.
Yeah, and not only looks bad, it looks cheesy. It's not explained like these powers that she had. She's supposed to be a werewolf. I mean, she just learned some sort of weird fucking magical.
It's like, okay,
shit,
she's a 10,000-year-old. Yeah, 10,000-year-old werewolf, but she suddenly knows she's a spellcaster too.
She went to Hogwarts. But the group that Stefan and Ben lead there get picked off one by one. Notice how they pick up all the subsequent characters, all the fucking little side characters that they have, one by one, getting ambushed left and right. The team just dwindles down to where it's just Stefan and fucking and Ben, who Ben is just, you know, by no fault of fucking Red Brown, he's a striking actor. He's a good looking guy, and he has moments in his career where he's good. He's really just really really bad here. He's just if Ben would just listen just to Stefan as opposed to going off all hot headed, maybe some of those people would still be alive. But maybe I'm thinking too much on it.
Fuck them. They're side characters.
Yeah. And this is where we would get the appearance of the Spirit Halloween bat death, you know, where, that I've already mentioned. Just so fucking weird, man. Just such a weird thing. I gotta ask, what was with the shot of the bat coming back out of the dude's mouth and playing peekaboo?
The gargoyle thing? It was another one of those, hey, I'm gonna try to be Fulci.
Yeah, I feel like that's what this guy was supposed to be. I think he was trying to, like, you know, do some weird Fulci stuff, but it just feels like a pale imitation of Fulci.
It really did. It was like he had, like, got inspiration from Dario Argento and Fulci and didn't know how to execute it.
Yeah, that's a fine tricky line to try to walk, man. But there's very few people that can pull that off. I just don't get the ending with there's two kind of endings here. There's the finale of the action where Stefan takes out Sturba, but he also gets caught up in the fire. Their fire will be mingled forevermore, and they're going to die together, so they'll be together. But they're brother and sister, so that means they're incestuous werewolves. Does that mean that Stefan is also a werewolf and is also 10,000 years old? The implications there are big.
Well, you know what? Because.
Yeah. You know why? Because it was wrote in the script.
Yeah. Because that's why. Why did they do that? Don't know.
I got a couple of questions about this tacked-on ending after Reb Brown runs up to one person in the middle of the festival, points a gun between his eyes, and says, "What's the quickest way to the airport?" Next thing you know, quick two-second shot of an airplane. Next thing you know, they're just back in America. They're living. It's supposed to be months later. They're in the USA, and they get a werewolf trick-or-treater.
Yeah.
That is revealed that they think it's a little kid in a... And it's probably some of the best werewolf makeup in the movie. I think they actually thought to themselves, we don't have one legit full-blown werewolf in this movie. They're all like apes made to look, you know, they're Planet of the Apes outfit made to look like fucking werewolves, you know. But what was the deal with the creepy neighbor that they went to talk to? And he's like, well, why don't you come over for a drink? Come inside. And he's like, okay, we will later. He's like, I hope so. Was he like, is it me or was creepy neighbor trying to do his best Peter Lorre impersonation?
Peter Lorre or Louis C.K., one of the two.
Yeah. This is where I'll sum things up is poor Sybil Danning. Like we had talked about already, 17 times they used that damn shot of her ripping her shirt off and exposing her breasts. I really hope in a manner of speaking that she got paid something extra for that or sued the shit out of them or I don't know. I just like you had said, I wonder what the hell she thought of that, of them using that shot 17 times. I could see them using it once. Right. In the end credit sequence, because it plays out kind of montage-y. They're using, you know, random clips from the movie. But, like, every time they cut back and forth, it's a shot of her ripping her shirt off, showing her top, and then one of the characters in the movie reacting to it. Like,
yeah, even well, not only that, but, like, at one point, they fucking repeatedly show it, like, 5-6 times in a row, just, like, on repeat. Like,
yeah.
Hey, look! Sybil Danning's tits. Sybil Danning's tits. Sybil Danning's tits. Like, okay, we get it. And what's sad is that despite it being a real shit movie, you had people coming in trying to class it up for you. And how do you repay them? By making it really trashy at the end.
Yeah, yeah. It just seems...
It was such 80s trash.
Yeah, that's the best way to sum this movie up. Pure 80s trash, but... Well, let's sum it up here in the end. You know how we do things around here. We give a quick summary of things and give a rating on a scale from 1 to 10, so have at it, man.
Oh boy. Okay, here we go. Like I said at the beginning of this review, what in the Kentucky Fried fuck did I just watch? Oh my lord. The makeup that they did in this movie is so bad. Like I said, and the fact that, you know, you were able to dig up the information that actually came from Planet of the Apes, and I had written the joke that it looked like something between the Planet of the Apes and the Geico caveman, you know, just goes to show you how on the ball I was with that.
Holy yeah, crap. I'll say.
You know, I was just being a smartass, but...
You hit the nail right on the head.
I did. Wow. Holy crap. But, you know, that being said, this movie is literally the nightmare spaghetti and meatballs potluck dinner. What has happened is that somebody, the crazy cat lady, decided to go to a potluck and invite us all to fucking dinner. And to see if the spaghetti was done, she threw it up against the wall. And owning 10 cats, all the stuff that she didn't stick to the wall, she just scooped up back into the pot. And yep, so you're going to get that little, everybody's sitting around the dinner table now eating this wonderful spaghetti and meatball dinner when all of a sudden everybody on their fucking table gets a fucking cat turd on their fucking mouth because it's not a meatball. It's a cat turd from the floor. And it's leaving a sour taste in your mouth. But there's at least one guy at the fucking table that's going, fuck all of you, I got a meatball. So Cameron, I ask you, is this your meatball, sir? Because it's a cat turd to me. I'm giving this a solid two.
I'm not coming in much higher. I'm giving it a 3, man.
So it is your meatball.
Yeah, I got the meatball. But my meatball has a substantial amount of shit on it, though. You know, now, if you were going to eat a ham sandwich, this is how I want to describe this movie. Not with the meatball analogy. I'm going with the ham sandwich here, so bear with me. If you were given a ham sandwich that was 95% ham and 5% shit, would you still be able to be convinced that that was a ham sandwich? Because this is a ham sandwich. This is a turd described as, or I'm going to start that over. This is a turd disguised as a ham sandwich. Now, I got to admit, I do like this movie to the extent of a movie that it's so bad it's good. Like, I love picking apart bad movies. You know, it's still fun. Like, it was a fun watch. It was a fun review. I had fun tearing it apart with you. I probably won't watch it again for many years. I got a copy of it on Laserdisc. I got a copy on VHS. I might just one day be like, hey, I'm going to see if I remember this movie right and be like, yep, won't watch it for another 6 years.
Right? Like, it's one of those movies that you can, don't get me wrong, I agree with you. It is a fun movie to fucking tear apart. It's so bad, it's good. But I'm not going to give you a high rating just because I like it.
Oh, no.
Because the general crowd is going to fucking be like, what is this? This is not my ham sandwich. This is not my meatball.
This is a turd.
This is definitely cat turd.
Yeah, like I said, I'm not coming in too much higher than you. I'm giving it a 3, so I'm almost right there with you. It's such an oddity that this movie, in part one, I don't think any movie sequels, direct sequels to the original, you know, part twos, have ever been so starkly different from the original source material. Because other than this being loosely about werewolves, I mean, and I'm using the term loosely about werewolves, it's, you know, I think the only other one that might, the only movie sequel that I think makes such a even wider left turn has got to be Highlander 2, The Quickening.
Yeah, that's, whew. What were they thinking with that one, too? That one is so, even when you go into the fucking longer Redux cut.
Oh, the Renegade version, as they call it?
Renegade version. That's what it is. Even the Renegade version, you're still like, okay, it makes a little more sense, but, ugh.
it makes it more coherent and make more sense, but it doesn't make it better in any way. But, yeah. not a good one, but you know.
What's that saying? If when you're eating a shit sandwich, the best thing to do is just buckle down, chomp, chew, repeat.
Yep.
Get it over with.
It's like, you know, I don't want people to sugarcoat a shit sandwich for me. Just hand me the shit sandwich. I don't need it to taste like sugar. It's all right.
Oh, God. Has anybody got any Tabasco?
Yeah. That might be the one thing that helps. Well, folks, you know, we didn't say that when we did this one that we were going to be doing a good sequel, because the whole theme of this show is to do the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I think it's safe to say this is one of the ugly sequels. It's a fun movie. It was a fun watch. I can't rightly recommend it to people that if you want to have a good beer and popcorn night with some friends and rip on a movie, kind of riff tracks, Mystery Science Theater 3000 style, and have a good time and hoot and holler with your friends and just be silly, then I can recommend it. But other than that, as an oddity, steer clear. This movie is a turd sandwich.
But it's good ugly.
Yeah, it's good ugly.
It's good ugly. It's a practice girl.
Yeah. it's like the practice jerk you give before a date, you know. It's just like you just got to get it out of the way. Before you watch this one, if you're stupid enough to watch this one before you watch part one in the series, that's your practice jerk. With that being said, I think we'll put a pin in this one, and I got to go hunt down some lunch as opposed to hunting down some werewolves here. But I want to thank you again, Eric, for coming on. I know it's been a while since we recorded, but I've been so caught up with the whole lot of time. I had so much on my plate, I couldn't do a sequel to Deja Vu one, but I'm back at it, so we'll be doing a couple more of these here real soon.
Oh, good. Next time we can do Vice Academy 6.
I will do any of the Vice Academy movies. You name which one and where, don't even need to say when, I will be there.
What a good series. I think we'd have to start with 2, because I think that is legitimately probably the best Vice Academy.
Well, it's the best Vice Academy by far, and not only that, it's one of the best sex comedies ever made.
Indeed.
Yeah, hands down.
Speaking of comedies, let me give you this. Let me leave you and the other fucking folks that listen to our little ragtag show here some fucking information. There's this movie out called Silent Night from 2021, and it's about basically these people are gathered in this house. And it's supposedly the end of the world, and they're all going to fucking take this pill and commit suicide and die together. Because shit has hit the fan globally, and nobody can survive this shit. Okay. Not going to ruin the movie for you.
It's a comedy?
That's what it was put under my friggin' categories as, comedy international drama. Yeah, that sounds like a real fucking fun time right there. Everybody's sitting around the house at Christmas time waiting to die. Because, well, you can die by the pill or you can die by the environment. Choice is yours. The pill is easy, or you can die a horrible, suffering death. Yeah. Ha 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 ha.
Happy holidays, I guess.
That's going to be a great fucking one for our Christmas special.
Yeah, I think we need to do that. I just looked it up and bookmarked it, so I'm already with you on that one.
Yeah, it's just one of my things. It's just like, I watched it last night. It was a decent movie, but I'm sitting here waiting for the ha-has. You know, and the ha-has never came.
Oh, gosh. That's funny. That's as funny as like,
it was the equivalent of somebody going, you know what movie made me laugh my ass off last night? The Road. You know what? What?
Such an uplifting, upbeat movie, isn't it?
Right. God, man, happy times are here to stay.
You know, I'm going to watch Threads next, I think.
Oh, God. Yeah, it's just like, why do you have this in comedy? There's nothing comical about this at all.
No, that doesn't sound like it, but it sounds like something I would laugh at.
Oh, I'll tell you right now, man. Fucking, you'll love it. You're fucking, you will be rooting for most of these people to fucking die.
I end up rooting for most people to die in a movie. Is it good guys, bad guys? Doesn't matter. I end up rooting for most people to buy it.
But I will check it out. Stuck in a house with a bunch of pretentious pieces of shit. It's like the more these people go on and talk about their lives, you're just like, wow. I'm not sad that any of these people are not going to survive the night tonight.
It's like you're looking you're looking at them going, take the pill.
Yeah, well, that's what I was. No, fuck that. I'm waiting for the fucking gruesomes. I'm waiting for the fucking secrets to come out. And they're like, you know what? We're all fucking going to die anyway. Fuck that pill. I'm going to stab a bitch.
Well, don't say anymore.
I never liked you, Helen. You and your fucking pot roast. You know, that's what I was waiting for.
Well, don't say anymore. I don't want any ruin for me. I'm going to watch this. I'm going to watch this week.
It's good. It's good. It's a slow burn, though, bro. It's a slow burn. It's not what I expected at all.
Right on, right on. I don't mind a slow burn, but I appreciate knowing that going into it, so I'll stick with it.
Well, I mean, when I slow burn, I mean, it's one of those. I'm trying to think of how to describe it to you so you know what you're getting into without ruining it.
Well, you've already convinced me to watch it, so I'll just watch it. Okay. I'm already going to watch it because I'm looking at it on IMDb and it looks spectacular.
It's slow paced and it's a thinker. Yeah. It's more of a think horror than it is a stabby stab horror.
That's okay. I like those too. Okay. I like knowing that what I'm in for though. Like if this is going to be, you know, more of a thinking man's horror movie or a stabby.
Yeah, it's definitely a thinking man's horror movie and it's definitely a slow ride. But when you get to your destination, you're going to be like, oh, that was fucking great.
Nice.
At least
nice.
I think so, anyway.
Well, folks, you heard it here first. Silent Night from 2021. Give it a shot. I will be giving it a shot sometime this weekend. Off of Mr. Phillips' recommendation here. This sounds like a fucking banger, so I'm going to watch it.
I believe it was on Paramount Plus.
I have that. I watched it on.
It was that or Prime Video, one of the two.
Yeah, I have both, so I'm in luck. Well, right on, man. Well, we'll bid this one a fond farewell for the moment. We'll leave you with that. Silent Night, check it out. I'm definitely going to be checking it out. It's bound to be leagues and bounds better than Howling 2, Your Sister is a Werewolf. This rocking, shocking new wave of horror. And if you believe that, folks, we got a real nifty bridge we want to sell you here at Cinema Degeneration.
Especially since that music wasn't new wave, it was progressive rock.
Right. Oh man. Well, alrighty, folks, thank you once again for joining us here. A sequel to Deja Vu. Next time around, I don't know what we're going to be bringing you next, but we'll try to serve you up a real banger here and get you a good sequel, perhaps. So thank you once again for tuning in to Cinema Degeneration. We appreciate you listening. If you could give the Podbean page a follow, a like, a share, we would highly appreciate it. Thank you, folks.
Join our dark side. We have cookies.
Come to the dark country.
For it is written, the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with her blood. And I saw her sit upon a hairy beast, and she held forth a golden chalice full of the filthiness of her fornications. And upon her forehead was written, behold, I am the great mother of harlots, and all abominations of the earth.